Welcome to Bed Crime Stories Podcast. I'm your host, T. I hope you guys are having a great time. To anyone new here, a warm welcome. Thank you so much for checking out the channel. All I ask is after watching and or listening to the video, if you find you enjoyed it or you learned something, do me a favor, smash that like button and consider subscribing. Now, without further ado, let's get started. Hey there, T here. Coming to you from a gray, rainy day in Phoenix, what we call an introspective day. I sincerely hope that all is well. Chez vous. The information I'm about to share with you came from Stephen B. Epstein's book about the Dan Markell murder case. The book is called Extreme Punishment, and it's a fascinating read. I highly recommend it. You can find it on Amazon. So I'm going to be telling you today about what the jurors thought regarding Wendy Adelson when she testified in the very first trial that was associated with this case. And that trial, you may recall, was a combined one for Sigfredo Garcia, the hitman, and his common law wife, Catherine McBanawa. So it was Katie's first trial, which ultimately ended up with a hung jury. Now, Wendy Adelson was subpoenaed to testify in this trial, and that's why the jurors had opinions about her. They saw her on the stand. They watched her as she answered. They heard what she said. When the jurors sitting in on that trial finally were able to deliberate, they spent some time talking about their impressions of Wendy Adelson. Virtually all of the jurors were turned off by how Dan Markell's ex-wife seemed to be dripping in white privilege and how she was living a very cush life despite her ex-husband's horrific murder. According to the author, Epstein, what really upset the jurors about Wendy was how she'd done everything in her power to erase Dan Markell and his family from her sons, Ben and Lincoln's, lives. This is the same stuff that has really bothered me, and I'm pretty sure it has bothered you as well. The way Wendy treated the Markells was so egregious and so wrong. The jurors also found Wendy's answers on the stand to be evasive and dishonest. In particular, they believed that Wendy had lied about it when she said she didn't drive down Trescott Drive to the scene of the crime. The jurors knew from other evidence presented that Wendy was lying about that and that she had driven to Trescott Drive. And what really galled a number of the jurors was when Wendy laughed at the notion that she might be charged in connection with Dan's death in the future. They were like, how is she so arrogant about this?
And I took a semester in law school, so forgive me.
You graduated law school, right?
This isn't my area of law.
When you clerked on the 11th Circuit, it was with Judge Jordan, right?
I did immigration appeals.
Yeah, but you still dealt with criminal stuff as well, too.
Very little.
So your understanding, though, is it doesn't mean they can't arrest you. They just can't use what you say here against you later on. So you're protected.
Correct.
And you needed that to testify, right?
It's just given to testify. It's not a question of whether I needed it. It comes with testifying.
You fear being charged by them, so you need to have that protection of
your
words.
I don't fear being charged for a crime I didn't commit, no.
Now, y'all had this nice exchange where it was pleasant, but there's actually tension between you, this office, right?
No.
They recently had your brother, Charles Adelson, arrested, and he's in custody, right?
Correct.
For first-degree murder?
Correct.
And there's no tension?
It's very uncomfortable to be here. It's hard to tell where the tension is coming from.
Don't you want to just wipe that smirk off her face? Like, why is she smiling like that? We're talking about her ex-husband's death and murder. One juror actually jotted down the following words in her notepad. She's a lying bitch. Per author Stephen Epstein, who wrote that book, the jurors agreed among themselves that Wendy likely had knowledge about the crime before the crime occurred. These jurors believed that she knew about the plot against Dan Markell, and they expressed that if given the chance, they would not have any difficulty convicting Wendy's mother, Donna Adelson, and her brother, Charlie, of first-degree murder. Remember, this trial took place before Charlie Adelson's trial. To the jurors, it made zero sense that anyone else would have hired Zigfredo Garcia and Luis Rivera to make the more than 7+ hour drive from Miami, Florida, to Tallahassee to do in Wendy's ex-husband. Knowing that Katie and Charlie were in an intimate relationship during that same period cemented the connection between the Adelsons and the hitmen in the jurors' minds. The jurors felt like their hands were tied, however, because they didn't have the chance to declare the rich architects of the crime guilty. The Adelsons were still going on cruises, taking out Charlie's boat, driving luxury vehicles, enjoying the ocean views from their ivory condo tower. And from Charlie's waterfront home, the jurors simply could not fathom why the only three people the state of Florida seemed willing to prosecute were three people from minority groups and underprivileged backgrounds. They were the poor laborers who got coaxed by dollar signs into doing the Adelsons' dirty work. The jurors hoped that other jurors in the near future would get a chance to judge the Adelsons, or at least some of them. And their wishes came true because we know that at least Charlie Adelson has been tried and convicted for his role in Dan Markell's death. When it came time to decide whether the state had proven that Katie McBanua was guilty, the jurors soon came to the conclusion that Luis Rivera's testimony had too many inconsistencies and inaccuracies to rely only on his account of Katie's involvement in the crime. Some jurors were not happy with the very generous plea deal that Rivera was offered to spill the beans. Rivera was already in prison, serving a sentence for earlier crimes at the time, and the deal he received to turn state witness was just 7 years in addition to his current sentence. Remember, Zigfredo Garcia ended up getting life in prison without the possibility of parole. But none of the jurors believed Rivera was illiterate. During Zigfredo and Katie's trial, their lawyers tried to convince jurors that Rivera was falsifying evidence to ensure that they, meaning Zigfredo and Katie, took the rap for the crime and not him. Prosecutor Georgia Kappelman told jurors in Rivera's defense, quote, "The man has a sixth grade education and reads on a third grade level. They want you to believe he understood the evidence well enough to falsify the testimony, get all these little intricate things correct." End quote. Georgia was like, Rivera is a simple tool, people. Please, he's not trying to come up with all these theories. He didn't do it. He's just telling you what he knows. He doesn't have the brain power to be that creative and cunning. The jurors felt that if they were going to convict Katie, a mother of two, with no prior criminal history, for first-degree murder, they wanted more reliable evidence. The jurors also discussed Katie's testimony in her own defense. None of them believed Katie's claims of 100% innocence. The jury as a whole found that her testimony was largely untruthful, and the evidence against Katie that most resonated with them were her large cash deposits after the crime and the checks that she received from the Adelson Dental Institute. All 12 jurors felt the money was evidence of a payoff, but one juror argued that Katie receiving tons of money from the Adelsons didn't necessarily prove her direct participation in the crime. Another juror told the others she didn't believe the evidence presented had been clear enough or strong enough to convict Katie of first-degree murder. This is when the jurors' cohesiveness fell apart. Another juror brought up the evidence that Katie drove to Charlie Adelson's house to get the payoff money and then take it to Jessica Rodriguez's apartment to deliver it to Rivera and Garcia. The juror felt that this proved Katie's direct involvement in the crime. But another juror disagreed, saying there was no such proof. Only Luis Rivera's sketchy testimony that Katie showed up with the money. Other jurors spoke up to say the juror was wrong because Sergeant Corbett of the Tallahassee Police Department testified that Katie's cell phone pinged cell towers near Charlie's home and later near Rodriguez's apartment. One juror said, quote, "We all saw it on the maps," end quote. The map showed Katie's, Zigfredo's, and Lewis's cell phones all eventually ended up together at the apartment that Luis Rivera shared with Jessica Rodriguez. The other juror shouted, show me the maps that demonstrated that Katie was there," end quote. With that, the other jurors started going through the stack of trial exhibits in the room. They were trying to find maps that the prosecutor had shared during Sergeant Corbett's testimony, but they couldn't find the maps. So the lead juror sent a note to the judge asking if Sergeant Corbett's cell tower maps were available. The judge wrote back that the maps they'd seen on their screens during the trial were merely, quote, "demonstrative aids and are not available as exhibits." The jurors were stunned by this response and very frustrated. They decided to stop deliberations at 8:30 p.m. and to begin anew on Friday morning. They were then taken to the nearby Sheraton Four Points Hotel, which is next to Florida State University's campus. Sheriff's deputies were there to ensure the group remained isolated. Each juror was allowed one phone call, but only while being observed by an officer. The jurors then learned that breakfast would be served at 5 a.m. At this point, some of the good feelings they had about doing their civic duty started to dissipate. They ended up eating breakfast alone in the dining room to ensure that they avoided contact with anyone who might try to sway their opinions. That's all for today. Until the next time on Bed Crime Stories.
When I took a semester in law school, so forgive me.
Graduated law school, right?
This isn't my area of law.
When you clerked on the 11th Circuit, it was with Judge Jordan, right?
I did immigration appeals.
Yeah, but you still dealt with criminal stuff as well, too.
Very little.
So your understanding, though, is it doesn't mean they can't arrest you. They just can't use what you say here against you later on. So you're protected.
Correct.
And you needed that to testify, right?
It's just given to testify. It's not a question of whether I needed it. It comes with testifying.
You fear being charged by them, so you need to have that protection of your
words. I don't fear being charged for a crime I didn't commit, no.
Now, y'all had this nice exchange where it was pleasant, but there's actually tension between you and this office, right?
No.
They recently had your brother, Charles Adelson, arrested, and he's in custody, right?
Correct.
For first-degree murder?
Correct.
And there's no tension?
It's very uncomfortable to be here. It's hard to tell where the tension is coming from.
They've discussed...